19. Ronan Lynch still remembered the best dream he'd ever had. It was an old dream now, 2 years old, maybe a little less. In the divide of before his father's death and after, it was after. It was also after his mother's death. It was before Harvard, before Bride. By the time this one showed up, Ronan had a pretty long list of good dreams. Most of them were from before, and most of them, like many good dreams, were wish fulfillment. There were the usual valuable possession dreams, opening a bedroom door to discover that the mattress had been replaced by a very expensive trendy sound system. There were dreams of impossible abilities, flying, speeding, long jumps, 1-2 punches that knocked intruders clear into next year. Sex dreams ranked well, depending on the players involved. They could just as easily slide into nightmare territory. Places of unreal beauty often made the list. Rocky green islands, clear blue lakes, flower-busy fields. And of course, there were the ones where he had his family back. What would you do if you accidentally brought your mother back? Adam had asked one evening before he'd left for Harvard. If you woke up with another Aurora, would you keep her? I'm not in the mood for word problems, Ronan had replied. You've thought about it, surely. Of course he had. The ethics of replacing his father were clear enough. Copying a real person was no bueno. But Aurora had already been a dream, which made the waters murkier. He wouldn't have been content with a dreamt copy, but Matthew might be. Could he end Matthew's grieving with another mother? Spare Declan the effort of raising Matthew by providing another mother? Did it do a disservice to his real mother's memory, even if she was already a dream? What if he did it wrong? What if he brought back a copy identical except for one fatal flaw? An Aurora with a disinterest in loving Matthew. An Aurora who didn't age. An Aurora who aged too fast. An Aurora with a desire to eat human flesh. What then? What then? I hadn't, Ronan lied. He didn't lie, especially to Adam, but he wanted the conversation to be over. What if you brought another me back? What would you do with the extra Adam? Adam asked, curious, unbothered. He wasn't squeamish, and in any case, it was just a thought exercise to him. His dreams weren't going to cough up another Ronan. But Ronan's dreams might. He'd lost sleep over this question, wondering if he truly had it in him to kill an unwanted, dreamt human. He'd learned to kill in his dreams, of course. The second he realized he didn't have enough control to prevent unwanted manifestation, he took down everyone in sight, and he'd accordingly woken with a share of corpses. But killing a dream after he'd woken? Killing them once they were real? It felt like a dangerous line to cross.
It's not going to happen, Ronan said, so it doesn't matter.
I think you ought to assume it's going to happen at some point and make a plan, Adam said.
It's not going to happen, Ronan repeated. But the threat had lodged inside him, and now dreams had to be unpopulated to land on the very good dream list. He could risk no more Matthews, no Auroras, not even any little Opals, who was slightly more creature than human. It was too weighty. So, the best dream. This was what happened in the best dream. Rona was in a car. It was a beautiful car, beautiful in appearance. Long, gleaming hood, glistening black wheels, glaring headlights with teeth-bared matte grille, and also in sound, engine heaving with power, exhaust growling with urgency. Every detail Ronan could see was art, metal and wood, bone and vines. It was one of those dream objects that didn't entirely make sense according to waking world rules. The car was already in motion when the dream began. Ronan was driving it. He could see himself in a rearview mirror. He was older, this Ronan in the mirror. His jaw was more squared and stubbled. He wore something leather and cool. He didn't know where he was coming from. The dream wasn't interested in that. The dream was interested in where the car was going, and this was where the car was going, through a chain-link fence. across cardboard boxes and plastic containers and toys, over another little car in the middle of the asphalt, tires disintegrating the other car's rear window as it went. It drove through a sign for a mattress store, flattened an inflatable snowman in front of another store, clipped a billboard, sending it all crashing down behind it. It took out bus stops and traffic lights, road signs and mailboxes. There were no people in the stream, so there was no screaming, no one to hurt, no one to bring back by accident. There was just a howl of the engine, the thump of the bumper, the grinding apocalypse beneath the tires. Music thumped from the car's beautiful carved speakers. The whole dream could hear it. And finally, Ronan found himself speeding directly toward an identical car with an identical Ronan in it. It took him a moment to realize it wasn't actually another car. It was the mirrored front of a club. The music from inside drowned out every other sound. It was the sort of music Ronan heard all the time when he was at Aglenby, the stuff that made him feel as if he truly were nothing like other people, not because he was gay or because his father had been murdered or because he could take things out of his dreams, but because he couldn't bring himself to sing along to the shit other students sang along to. Funny how a handful of people loving a song you couldn't stand could make you feel inhuman. In this dream, the best dream, Ronan and the dreamt car smashed right through the club's window. There were no dancers, just pounding music, strobe lights, glitter, and 10,000 alcoholic beverages on the floor where there should have been people. Ronan began to do donuts. The tires squealed, drinks flew, speakers topped. Plastic splintered, metal twisted, glass shivered. Destruction drowned out both the club's music and Ronan's, and it was gorgeous. Then Ronan woke up, heart pounding, hands still clenched in fists, ears ringing with remembered sound, paralyzed. What had he brought back? Only the dream's furious joy. That was the best dream. The first thing the dreamers destroyed with Bride was an exit ramp. The battle was undramatic, uncontested. Once upon a time, there was an exit ramp cut deeply into a mountain by bulldozers, a clover leaf of asphalt imposed upon the wild. And then once upon a little later time, the exit ramp didn't exist anymore. It was just a pile of rubble that returned the hillside to its natural form. The work of a transient storm dreamt to thrash just beneath the soil. Why did it even need to be there, a new highway, a new clover leaf in the middle of nowhere? Because it could be. Next, there was the dump. Trash piled upon trash, old groceries rotting, new appliances rusting, plastic bottles bleeding out the remainder of their contents. Ronan had never seen a dump so big. Hadn't believed such dumps existed in the United States. He hadn't imagined there was so much trash in the country, much less in a single dump. It took all night even for a dreamt blue fire to burn it all. And when the fire took the support buildings and the road leading to the dump too, the dreamers didn't stop it. It was only when the otherworldly flames began to creep toward the trailer park below that Bride spat scornfully and signaled for Ronan to smother it with a quickly dreamt dissolving blanket. The next to go was a brand new shopping area, which was identical to the shopping area just a few miles away, which was identical to the shopping area just a few miles away, which was identical to the shopping area just a few miles away, which was identical to the shopping area just a few miles away, which was identical to the shopping area just a few miles away. The dreamers arrived and they put on their masks, and less than an hour later it was all gone. Dug up, dug under. A dreamt dirt dragon charged from the ground to destroy and then dissolve just as quickly when the chaos was through. After that, the dreamers destroyed an underwater transmission line, a 230 kV line that had once connected generators on opposite sides of a riverbank and also completely disordered the local ley line. As night fell, a school, a swarm, a hurricane of pitch-black dolphins had snaked toward the line. They were difficult to see in the water, since they reflected light in nearly the same way as the river water all around them. They were, after all, made almost entirely of dark ice. They were melting even as they swam toward their dreamt purpose, but not fast enough to ruin their mission. Only enough to chill the river as they dug through the silt and sediment down to the transmission line. Only enough that they could no longer swim at speed as they parted their bottle noses to reveal shining, hungry teeth. Only enough that by the time they had chewed through the work that had taken many months, there was nothing left to see of the dolphins but a few melting hearts at the bottom of the river. The dreamers traveled hundreds of miles each day to put distance between themselves and their latest crime. Over and over they drove to a destination, planned how best to destroy it, dreamt the tool of destruction, unleashed it, and then lingered long enough to make sure they'd left no trace of their dreaming behind. They disrupted a convoy of trucks carrying transformers. They aerosolized 2 acres of unused concrete parking lot outside a dying mall. They filled canals and emptied swimming pools. Everywhere they went looked different when they were gone, or rather, it looked less different, more like it had before humans arrived. When they dreamt, Ronan dreamt of Illidorin. He dreamt of the stump, and he dreamt of a slowly uncurling green shoot growing from its interior. It was getting stronger. Ronan was getting stronger, too. "What do you feel?" Bride asked. They sat on the roofline of an abandoned Victorian, looking out over the battered town around it. It was just at sunset, and there was barely enough light to see shapes by natural light. The dreamers would have been visible on their perch if anyone had looked up, but no one in this town had looked up for decades. "Ronan," prompted Bride, "what do you feel?" Ronan didn't answer. It was the kind of night that made him want to run and run and run until he couldn't catch his breath, but that wasn't the kind of feeling Bride meant.
"I feel like I can still smell that mill," Hennessy said. "I will smell like it for the rest of my life."
The dreamers had just destroyed a pulp mill on the other side of town. It had been one of the worst smells Ronan had ever smelled, and that included the odors at the West Virginia Museum of Living History, the trash dump they destroyed, and the bodies he'd buried over the years. He wondered how long it would take people to notice it was gone. The mill. The smell. All of it. Would they notice the silhouette was missing from the horizon before the sun went down? Perhaps tomorrow when they arrived to work, only to discover the mill had been replaced with a meadow. Unless tomorrow was a weekend. Ronan had no idea what day of the week it was. Time worked differently now. Weekends felt like a concept that had been important before. "What do you feel?" Bride persisted. "Nothing." "This dinosaur," Ronan said, running his fingers over Chainsaw's nubbly talons. The raven clutched the peak of the roof beside him and peered off at the disappearing sun, beak parted, as if imagining how good it would have tasted.
"And the spine of this roof up my..."
Hennessy gasped. Bride just had time to grab her arm before she tumbled from the roof. Her fingers clung to him as he dragged her back up. Ronan didn't have time to ask what had happened. It hit him next. Suddenly, he was electric. He was free, his thoughts flying into the air. He was trapped. His body fused to something deep in the earth. He was both these things at once. He felt as if he could do anything, anything he had ever possibly wanted to do, anything except untangle himself from that thing he was wound around. This thing, this entity, this energy, this whatever it was making him so powerful, so alive. He understood it. He heard it. He was it. "God damn," he whispered. Bride smiled. It was an altogether different smile than Ronan had ever seen him wear, his light teeth visible in the deepening dark, his eyes half closed, his head thrown back, euphoric, relieved.
"That's the ley line," Bride said.
Ronan felt it uncurl through him, like vines stretching toward the sun. It was the humming possibility of his dreams, the sense of ever-widening options, but he was awake. With a glorious cry, Chainsaw threw herself from the roof and soared high up into the air.
Part of him felt like he might be able to join her.
Why is it doing that? Hennessy asked in a small voice.
Bride was still holding her steady on the roof, a hand gripped very firmly around her upper arm.
It's a surge, he said. It won't last. If we are lucky, we will feel another. Perhaps a third. The heartbeat of a sick planet coming round.
Nightwash felt a million miles away, like something that could never touch Ronan. He was the night, and he was the world, and he was as infinite as them both. Chainsaw cawed up above, and Ronan spontaneously leapt to his feet, keeping his balance easily on the ridge of the roof. He cawed back to his dreamt raven at the top of his lungs. The sound echoed all around the roofs of this dead town, making it sound like there was a whole flock of ravens, a whole flock of Ronans, even though there was just a pair of them.
It's so strong, Hennessy said, even though it was already beginning to wane.
The world was changing.
It was becoming a place someone like him had been made for. Bride said, "This is only the beginning."